or as a parent with somebody with a mental illness, it can be exhausting, right? And so you need to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
That oxygen mask analogy, right? Like if you're in an airplane and the oxygen mask falls down, the stewardess says, put it on yourself first before you help other people, or you're going to run out of oxygen. You're not going to help very many people.
This is episode 20. Let's get started.
Smarter Parenting welcomes you to our podcast series, The Parenting Coach for ADHD. Here to heal and elevate lives is your parenting coach, Siope Kinikini.
So actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to just ask you to introduce yourself and kind of just tell us a little bit about your experience, your background, where you're working now, the population you're working with, and some of the challenges that you have, if that's okay.
So my name is Nikki Olson. I am a licensed clinical mental health counselor. And so I have my master's in mental health counseling. And I currently work for Utah Navajo Health Systems as a therapist here. And so we are an integrated community health center, which has four clinics across the Navajo Reservation. I've also been a juvenile probation officer. I've worked in group homes. I've worked in juvenile detention centers. So I kind of have been case manager, all of the above, done all of that.
You've done just about everything there is to do. And you've worked with pretty much every age, right?
Every age and every population, just about, yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's fantastic. I'm curious, like in working with a population like the Navajo Nation, you're dealing with cultural issues and mental health. I mean, there are different kind of ideas about mental health, or maybe there's even a non-belief about mental health. And I'm just curious, what's your take on working with populations that don't have really a mental health? Well, I don't know that. You could probably address that better than me. So
yes. So we have a traditional consultant that works with us.
Okay.
So someone who is, he is, I think he's a, I don't want to use the word licensed, but he's a medicine man that has been certified through the Navajo Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can work with him or refer to him in regards to cultural aspects.
Okay.
We have trainings and things based on the Navajo culture and trying to understand that better. So he can do, our traditional consultant can do the prayers and songs and ceremonies that are needed in the way of the Navajo culture.
Yeah.
And so we are like the Western culture, I guess, or the Western way, I guess they call it.
Right.
How mental health is perceived. And so that can be perceived differently across the reservation, depending on location, depending on education or just family dynamics. So it can run the gamut of what people's belief systems are in regards to mental health. We try to do a lot of awareness in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
So we have domestic violence advocates, we have peer support specialists, we have supported education specialists that sort of are out there and educating people. We have a high rate of suicide on the reservation. And so I've been highly trained in that area. And
Is that with like younger people or with older people or?
Yeah, actually the highest rate of suicide on the reservation and throughout the state of Utah is males age 40 to 45.
Oh, wow. So, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So okay. you would think kind of kids, but there's reasons behind, you know, what that age range means and, you know,
right.
things like that. But we see all ages. With that, the Navajo culture doesn't actually have a word for suicide because it's so taboo.
Wow.
And so they have to describe it in a different way.
Mm.
But I've received some different training from different medicine men to indicate that it's not that suicide is a taboo subject per se. It's that it's not a topic to be played with in a playful manner. And so they don't want people, if you do that, you can bring the spirits upon you and you suffer from that.
Okay.
And so we need to talk about it in a respectful, way and a teaching way and a preventive way. And if we're doing that, we're not calling upon those spirits to enter into our homes or with our families. And so there's a lot of education that has to go with that.
Yeah.
In order to teach and prevent and intervene and to even ask about that at a visit, you have to do a lot of education. But it's needed to be addressed every visit, every person, you know, because it's such a high rate here.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic as far as like the family has a certain belief system and then you're coming in with another belief system and you're trying to merge two things to address the suicide, right?
Right.
Exactly. And how does that, I mean, what does that look like? I mean, how do you, who takes the lead on what, who does what? I mean, how does that work?
Well, it depends on the dynamic of what's happening. So you might have someone that's bringing in their child because they're worried about them. And then I ask them if they're having thoughts of suicide and the kids talk about that. Suicide's not necessarily yes or no. It's a spectrum, you know,
that
it's not a risk level, I guess I should say. And so we address that risk level and talking to the parents, that's when you get an idea of where their thought process is. And it's really just about, it's not even, I don't even see it just as a cultural thing, but just an America, you know, like in general, a lot of people aren't aware that talking about suicide prevents suicide. There's still a thought process across all of America that talking about it, you know, is brings about that idea. You're going to put that idea in their head. So it's really about educating and saying, if that idea is already there, you know, we're not giving them that idea. It's already there. If it's not there, us talking about it isn't all of a sudden going to give them that idea of suicide.
Right.
And so it's just about education in that process and what the parents can do to help with that and talking about, there's certainly ceremonies are offered, there's prayers offered, there's songs offered, and we can set you up with that if they're interested in that for cultural reasons.
Right.
That can help as well. We all have our own belief systems and how we can deal with that. And we want to honor those and respect those for sure. But not talking about it doesn't necessarily help any of that.
Yeah, right. And it's like opening the communication, I guess, between people is essential. But almost as a clinician, it sounds like you take a back seat in a way and let them kind of dictate how they want to navigate through things. And then you join them along the journey. Would you say
that? Very client-centered.
Yeah, very client-centered and very focused on what they believe, because that's... Yeah. That's where. Do you challenge their belief? Do you challenge their belief systems or?
Not necessarily challenge their belief systems. I think a lot of people have, I mean, even in my own faith, a lot of people have their own preconceived notions of what really it means.
Yeah.
And so I challenge them to really understand what it means.
Okay.
That I don't know that any culture or faith, believes in something to harm you in any way, you know?
Right.
And so I challenge them to figure out what that really means and going to the source of where they might learn that and understand that better.
Okay. That's great. Now, in working with the families, I'm just curious, do you work with children with ADHD? Or, I mean, is ADHD something that happens with the population that you're working with?
Quite frequently. And I feel like, so there's ADHD can also mimic a lot of trauma symptoms as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a fine line there. And a lot of times with kids, as they're coming in, the parents will say, I want some medication for my kids for ADHD, you know?
Right.
And so we have a contract through the University of Utah to meet with a child psychiatrist to get a recommendation on that. And they're really good about saying, let's try some behavioral techniques or let's try some therapy first or let's start on this medication and see. And so if I'm unsure or want to get a second opinion, I always have that there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't prescribe medications. And so someone coming to me is looking for therapy, right? And
some
behavioral techniques and how to deal with that. And then I'm also assessing for, is this ADHD or is this trauma? Is this, you know, what else is going on that could be causing the child to not be able to focus, to be hyperactive, to be unable to follow instructions, you know, those kinds of things. There could be other things involved besides ADHD. I feel like that's a good go-to for people now to say.
Right. It seems like it's an easier thing to do, right? It's
Yeah. Like, I can be ADHD sometimes, depending on if I don't like the thing, if I don't, you know, necessarily want to be doing it. And so really looking and assessing, is that across all areas? Are you only seeing that in one area? Or are you seeing that in lots of areas of their life? Yeah. Who is saying this? Just the parent, and at school they're perfectly fine,
right?
Or, you know, what's really going on? Are they anxious? Are they worried about something? What's really keeping them from getting there?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of gathering collateral information to figure out
right
what's happening, what's really happening.
You know, that's the recommendation that we make, is actually doing it through a team, you know, rather than having it just one clinician saying it's ADHD, but actually consulting with a physician, actually doing a history. So we know, like, developmentally, have there been other things that have happened before you reach that diagnosis? Because you don't want to give medication that's inappropriate, you know,
because
it will never work.
Right.
That's really great.
And we have a lot of adults will come in seeking out medications for ADHD for various reasons, you know? And so obviously you don't get ADHD as an adult. Like, that has to be diagnosed as a child, or there has to be an indication of that as a child.
Right.
And you don't just develop that as an adult. There's something else going on if you're not able to focus. As an adult, you know? Mm-hmm. And so really looking at that too, and seeing like, were you just an unmedicated person with ADHD, or, you know, is there something else going on? Is there seeking a medication for other reasons? You know,
That's
really looking at that.
So tell me about behavioral interventions that you use with families. Like, what type of behavioral interventions would you recommend? And why is it important to intervene with behavioral interventions rather than just using medication? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think it's important for kids to know how to learn to deal with their ADHD. Like, there are behavioral techniques you can do to learn to deal with ADHD. It's not a diagnosis like schizophrenia or bipolar that, you know, you have to have the medication for it. You don't have to medicate the ADHD. And in fact, it's probably better, especially when they're growing, because it can stunt their growth. There's side effects. There's all these other things. It keeps you from weight gain. Can have lots of side effects, that you really want to do everything you can before you're medicating, or be on the lowest dose possible while you're using other techniques, so you're not having those side effects. You don't want them to have to rely on the medication forever too. You want them to be able to manage it, or maybe use it as needed if they need to be able to be on one that could do that.
Right.
But yeah, so I use a couple of different techniques. Being trained in with Families First, and the name is not coming to me.
The teaching family model.
I'm like, what?
That's exactly what we use, everybody.
Yeah. The teaching family model. And I still use a ton of that, like, in teaching skills, like the preventive teaching, the corrective teaching, you know, and just teaching basic skills of how to, you know, following instructions and giving smaller instructions, you know, using effective praise, not just general praise, but how do I get them to understand the relationship between what they're doing and what the result of that action is, getting that cognitive thinking going and becoming aware. But I also use a technique, the ADHD affects the executive functioning part of their brain, their ability to organize, problem solve, time management, communication, empathy, you know, all of that's like in the executive functioning brain, right?
Yeah.
And those networks are either not firing, they're blocked, you know, however you want to describe it. So I also use a technique called mind-body bridging to help them reconnect those networks and get those networks firing again, or at optimal level for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm big on that mind-body connection, becoming aware of what's triggering that mind and body to disconnect, what is triggering that part of your executive functioning brain to not fire, and putting on turning your executive functioning brain turns off, your default brain turns on, your autopilot brain, right.
And
so whatever you've practiced in your autopilot brain is what's going to continue to happen, right. And so we need to turn off that default brain, turn on the awareness of the executive functioning brain, and we do that through techniques that bridge the mind and body back together. Okay. To be able to understand that. So through mindfulness techniques, coming to your senses, becoming aware of your senses, but also what is it that's triggering your mind and body to disconnect in the first place? Mm-hmm. What are those reasons in your life that are causing that to happen? What is it, I think I should know the answer to every question on the test, or I think that I should have the attention on me, or I think I should feel comfortable, or I think, whatever those reasons are that aren't happening, how do I diffuse those reasons and understand that I can still have those desires, but it's probably not going to happen all the time.
Right.
And so I can stay in my natural functioning here with my executive functioning brain turned on by using those techniques.
Right. In what does that look like when you're teaching this? I mean, are you teaching them brain and then this autopilot and then how to, hijack that autopilot? Is that what it is?
Yeah, kind of. So we call it resting it.
Okay.
So there, the reason that all of us, and it's not just with ADHD, we all have a system inside of us that can become active and cause that default brain to turn on and your executive functioning brain to turn off. It doesn't only affect your brain, it affects every cell of your body. So you're going to feel that in your body. You're going to feel it with that tension in your body, and you're going to feel it what we call describe as mind clutter. Your mind is just starts. I describe mind clutter as kind of a snowball of thoughts. You start with one thought that explodes into 50 other ones, and those 50 explode into another 50.
Right.
And it keeps going. And pretty soon none of us can focus, right? That's what I say, like, we all experience ADHD at some point, right?
Right.
We're feeling this jittery, like I can't still, or just an overwhelming tension, whatever that might be. It's different for everybody. And this mind clutter that keeps us from functioning the way we want to function. So the ADHD might make it more difficult and be triggering that system more often, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not saying that their ADHD, or this system is the cause of their ADHD, but ADHD can cause this system to wake up more often.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
We all have this system. It all becomes awake at some point in our lives, but some people's wakes up more often and stays awake too much. So I use the analogy of like driving a manual car in first gear at 60 miles an hour. Like you're burning out your engine, right?
Right, right.
And so that running your system for too long like that can burn you out and have lots of effects, depression, anxiety, able to focus. And the reason that that system turns on can be for different reasons. It can be for trauma. It can be for, you have clinical depression. You have generalized anxiety. You have ADHD. Many reasons. But depending on the age group of people, how I introduce all of those would be different.
Okay.
So for kids, I kind of use that system that we're talking about. I name it, I have them name it an animal. Like I have puppets in my office and I'll say, hey, pick out, I want you to look through all those animals and I want you to find the animal that you think doesn't listen very well and is just not very wise in its decision making. And so they'll pull one out. They might pull out a monkey. I'll say, okay, every time this monkey is awake inside of you, this is how it might act. You might start throwing fits. You might start not listening to your parents or being mean to your brother and sister or not following instructions. And then, so how can we put this monkey to sleep so that you can be in charge again? So I might use an analogy like that.
That's
for adults,
great. That is really great.
In all of that, after I teach that to them, there's like mapping processes that you help you understand and get to know your identity system and how that might affect you. And so I might walk them through some mapping processes to show them, just to kind of see it on the paper of how it works and how they can use those techniques to rest that system. Now, what does it look like? And what's the practical application of this outside of my office? What are you going to be doing on a daily basis?
Right.
So it's all different.
For the different populations, it's kind of the same concept. It's just giving them these different approaches to deal with it. So with the child, it's kind of more imaginary. And then with the adult, it's like just preparing them for what's eventually going to happen and then how to deal with it.
I teach all the same tools from 0 to 99, but I will do it in a different way. Just use their language, meet them where they're at and help them understand it in a different way. Like, I might use more technical terms with adults or more science behind it. Kids don't care about the science.
Yeah.
I don't care about the technical things. Tell me how to do it. I'll do it. You know?
Right, right.
I might leave all of that out for the kid. Explain it to the parents. Or sometimes adults are like, I don't care either. I don't need to know the science. It works.
So, yeah, right, right. As long as it works, that's that's kind of what we're looking at. Do you have any suggestions for parents who may be exhausted at this point in dealing with a child with ADHD or with any mental illness or struggling through any behavioral problems? What advice would you give parents?
Couple things. One, and this is, you know, we kind of learned this in our master's program too, is self-care, right?
Yeah,
you can really get drained caring for other people. Like as, you know, a healthcare professional or as a parent with somebody with a mental illness, it can be exhausting, right? And so you need to take care of yourself. That oxygen mask analogy, right? Like if you're in an airplane, then the oxygen mask falls down, the stewardess says, put it on yourself first before you help other people, or you're going to run out of oxygen. You're not going to help very many people before you run out. And so finding those self-care things, whether that's exercise, whether that's finding a support group of other people who do that, an online support group, a physical support group where you go, making sure you're eating healthy, making sure that you, let's see, what are the self-care? You know, self-care I always describe as anything that you feel rejuvenated afterwards. So sometimes a nap is self-care. Sometimes
right.
Watching a TV show could be self-care. Sometimes it's going for a walk. Sometimes for me, I like to take a bath every night just to like unwind and get rid of all that stress and to, like cut off the day and be done. And so anything that's that you feel rejuvenated at the end, going for a bike ride, taking your kids for a walk, going to the park, whatever that might be, you really have to integrate that into your life. And our parents will say, well, I don't have time for that. Well, it's that oxygen mask, right? Yeah, you don't have time to put your own oxygen mask on, but how far are you going to make it if you don't? You really are going to burn out.
Yeah.
And then it's
kind of interesting because I notice with some parents, they feel like they should be, and they're almost operating out of guilt. So it's kind of this dual thing where it's guilt and exhaustion, but they're just like, I'm going to push through. And then it's crash and burn. So I'm glad you said self-care because that's definitely something I think everybody could use, you know, and especially dealing with children with a lot of behavioral issues.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What would you say to parents who feel like they can't leave their child alone because their child would just freak out or whatever? Do you have any suggestions for them?
Yeah. So you're talking about like, well, nobody knows how to care for my child like I do kind of.
Yes.
Thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. I say you train somebody. I say you find somebody and you teach them how to do it. You train grandma, you train grandpa, you train dad, you train sibling, whatever it is so that you can get that self-care. That if you train that child to only rely on you, you are going to be the only person in their life ever able to deal with them.
Yeah.
Like we train people how to treat us, right?
Right.
We do that. And so if there are certain techniques that are helpful for that child, teach them to somebody, show them how to do it. You know, you can find a provider or somewhere that can help with that, or a family member or a friend. That thought process or that story that we tell ourselves, that we're the only one that can care for our child, is just a story.
It's just a story.
And it's running our lives, and it's keeping us from functioning the way we want to function. It's not letting us see life as reality of there are options out there. Yes, they might be harder. I just can't go to the gym and drop them off at the daycare there because that might not be great. But I may have to work with somebody and take some time to say, hey, if I do this for an hour and it was during this time and you were able to do this with them, would that be possible? It's going to take more work. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's possible. It is possible.
No, that's great. Now, I'm curious about, so you stop families first, obviously, because you're doing clinical work, which is great.
I do some of it on the side sometimes.
Oh, do you sometimes? So
sometimes Wayne calls me and asks me to do something.
There are still families down there? I mean, with a population of like 3,000, I'm kind of curious. Is there, there are still referrals,
there's somewhat referrals. I think I finished a family last year, and that I hadn't done one in probably 3 or 4 years, but I think they're hoping to kind of get it started back up in the Four Corners area and find somebody that could do that more full time.
Yeah. There's
definitely a need for it here.
Yeah.
It was just a time in my life I needed to transition to more daytime work when my kids are at school so I could be home with them at night.
And, right.
Yeah, had a great opportunity presented to me, and, you know, and so I just transitioned to that. But I would love to train somebody down here and
right.
have that be a possibility.
To kind of do that. What I find amazing is you're really in a remote area, and yet you're able to access still all these resources. That's pretty creative on your part. I mean, is that something that was built in, or is that something that you had to figure out? Is that, how did that all come about?
Like the training and stuff?
Or yeah, trainings like the- and just, you know, you had mentioned there's a, you have someone from the University of Utah who's helping us out. And, I mean, how did that all happen?
So the University of Utah coordinates with us a lot on our specialty care. So we do a lot of, like we have teleneuro, telederm, telepsych, you know, we have a lot of, what do they call that? The, where you can go through the screen.
Yeah. It's like like telemed type.
Telemed. Thing. Yeah.
Telemed.
So we have a lot of telemed stuff here where they can do that. And some of the specialists come down. We have people that fly in and, well, for the day, and like cardio flies in from University of Utah, I think once a month. And we have like a specialty department here that recruits and has people come in from different locations and things. I think people are wanting to help our locations, just a matter of logistics and making it work and
things
like that. As far as trainings and understanding things, I mean, with your license, you have to get continuing education. So I often try to get it in areas that I feel like I'm like, oh, I've seen a lot of this and I'd really like to up my education in this area and learn more about that. People will bring trainings down here because we have, you know, school social workers, we have counselors at other clinics and stuff. And so if we can pay somebody to come here, it's cheaper than, you know, and training everybody all at once.
Right.
And so I'm always about like, what's new, what's upcoming, how can I learn? That's just kind of been my, I want to know how to deal with this.
So right.
I'm always seeking out education and learning.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks, Diopia. It's good to see you.
Kind of nice to reconnect. So
it is. It is. That's awesome.
We here at Smarter Parenting want to thank you for listening to this podcast. And we are passionate about helping families who have children with behavioral issues, specifically with ADHD. We need your help. And the way that you can help us is to subscribe, to like, to share, and to comment on this podcast. We want to reach out to as many people as we possibly can in order to help those families who are in desperate need of resources. So again, those are the things you can do. Like, subscribe, comment, and share. Please do that. Help us grow. Help us move forward and accomplish what we want to do in helping families around the world.